What do you want? Statement of purpose? Should I email you? Should I put this on your action item list?
Look.
You decide your own level of involvement.
We are the Prepper Broadcasting Network.
You are now listening to the Patriot Power Hour, the newest show of the Prepper Broadcasting Network. This live episode features the situational awareness you need to practice self-reliance and independence. Introducing your hosts, Ben, the Breaker of Banksters, and Future Dan, the editor of FutureDanger.com.
Folks, we are live, July 8th, 2021. This is not your normal episode of Patriot Power Hour. In fact, it's not a numbered episode per se. We will be live for Patriot Power Hour next Tuesday the 13th. But before we do that, we have a very, very special interview today. But before we get into that, let me bring on Future Dan. How you doing there, buddy?
Yeah, I'm doing well. This is a... I don't think we've done this before. It's a special edition without a... enumerated Patriot Power Hour, which means what? We're not covering news tonight.
Not much of a news blitz, and it's a little bit more in the heart of prepping.
Yeah.
And listeners of our show certainly know we talk a lot about economics and national debt and interest rates and inflation and, yes, precious metals. And tonight, I'm extremely excited. We have a guest, expert silversmith. He is going to answer all of our questions about... not just smelting and forming and using the metals, gold and silver, really, but testing purity, you know, best practices for bartering. We got a lot of other questions. I'm really excited for that.
So through the broad and potent network of our esteemed colleague, Dave, the NBC guy, Jones, we came upon an opportunity to have a talk with Josh from Silver Shiny Bars. Josh from Shiny Bars does silver, poured silver, casting, is a silversmith and all, for all intents and purposes. Although we're going to talk about, like, what exactly does that mean today versus what exactly he's doing. We're going to get into all the details of producing silver bullion, and for that matter, gold, right? Bullion, precious metals, but our focus tonight is on silver.
For sure, for sure. So without further ado, let me bring Josh on the air. Josh, you there, sir?
Yes, sir.
Doing very well, doing very well. You know, we're really excited when we first heard about kind of your specialty and what you're into from Mr. Dave Jones. We were stoked. I was, again, as a silver bug and whatnot, I was like, wow, I have so many questions, more than I have answers. So, you know, it took a little longer than we had hoped on, mostly on our end, but we did get you on tonight. So super stoked. Thanks for joining.
Yes, sir. It certainly is
a great. So Josh, tell us a little bit about Shiny Bars, your background, and how you got into what your website is all about.
Sure. Shiny Bars has a pretty unique backstory. I've always been a IT guy. I spent a few years in the Army. I went to college working towards my MBA, and at some point I realized I'm going to forget what I know about business if I don't start a business. So it's kind of born out of my interest. Around about 2009, I started buying silver, more as an investment than prepping. But somewhere along the way, I had the thought in my mind, how in the world would I sell this stuff if I needed to sell it? And Shiny Bars was born. As the years went by, you know, I really developed the love for silver and continued to develop the business and entertain folks like yourself and provide a product that is useful for the future.
Yeah, you say entertain because a lot of the products on shinybars.com are artistic as well as practical. Can you describe some of the offerings on shinybars.com?
Yes, sir. We kind of discovered along the way, and it kind of goes with any type of collectible item. I mean, you think if you buy Hot Wheels as a collectible, you're not going to buy the same one 50 times. And we have found that folks buy silver. They don't just want the same bar over and over. We started creating unique products such as guitar picks, nuggets, buttons, 2021 toilet paper bars and Valentine bars. And we also tailor to heavier bars such as 10 ounce and kilo, more investment grade type bars.
Yeah, super cool. I'm looking through it right now on shinybars.com. And I'm one of those who also started buying silver. I'd say maybe 2010, 2011, after the financial crisis. I'm like, I want to get to some hard money. And like you said, at first, I just bought plain silver rounds. But after a while, I kind of wanted a little variety. You know, most of mine is in bulk or, you know, silver rounds or American silver eagles. But I do have an assortment kind of really unique silver, you know, ounces or bars that I keep separate from kind of my stash. That's really cool. You know, it's kind of like a collectible. I think it's a lot cooler than like stamps, right? And you don't have to worry about it burning away because it's metal. So super unique. I see that on the site you've sold more than 47,000 troy ounces. So you're doing pretty well. Have you noticed a big uptick in demand in the past year or two?
Absolutely. At the start of COVID, we had a pretty large inventory, and there was a run on silver, and we actually sold out of our entire inventory in about 24 hours, which in turn led to a supply side issue where we couldn't even buy silver to supply demand, which really echoes why if you want a physical metal or a commodity, you just need to accumulate it before there's a problem, you know, before there's a catastrophe or inflation or whatever, because once it happens, you're not going to be able to buy it.
What was the timing on that shortage, Josh? When what month and year was that happening?
That would have been the end of February of 2020,
right when it was coming. Okay,
exactly. It our entire inventory, as well as every major dealer, sold out of their inventory. We could not source supply from some of the largest refiners or retailers on the planet that we have wholesale accounts with.
That was about 30 days before major stock market crashes on Monday, Thursday, and the following Monday, and it just all came apart. About it was exactly. A leading indicator. You at the dealer level, guys like Josh at Shiny Bars couldn't get the product. Interesting. I got some questions exactly. About the just the physical infrastructure, the mechanics of hand poured silver.
I got some more questions I got to get into before we get into the smelting and stuff. I want to get deep into that. But, you know, first of all, I want to say it's way better to be 5 years early than 1 day late. I think that's what you're saying here, Josh. The one thing I really wanted to hit on, though, I know that you've seen the spread between the physical price and the paper price just explode, right? On Wall Street today, silver's allegedly $25 an ounce. You can't find it for less than $35 an ounce. And that spread exploded right during that supply shutout that you had, that you were talking about. So, do you see that abating, or do you expect that premium to even increase at some point?
Yeah, it's a difficult subject. The paper supply, in my opinion, is trash. you'll see times, for example, when COVID struck in February of last year, when it was really at its height and physical supply was nil, there was no ability to buy physical, prices didn't respond, purely, in my opinion, because of the paper markets. I mean, you can draft prices however you want if you're not delivering a physical product. But at some point in a catastrophe or inflation or whatever, there's going to be a complete disconnect between paper prices and physical prices because you can't represent a physical product with a piece of paper.
Right. I mean, it might say that the paper price is $25, but if it's sold out, the price is darn near infinite. Or at a minimum, you got to go to people with hard cash and be like, hey, sell me some of your silver stash, right? So now I will hand it over to Future Dan right now because we really want to get into your expertise about the physical processes involved, maybe the equipment involved, the hazards, even the feasibility. I know it's not easy. You know, how did you first learn about these processes? And then we got a chain of questions after that. But how did you first get into the actual physical aspect of, you know, handling it, you know, smelting it or all the different things you might do?
Well, to back up on the discussion a bit, when I initially launched the business, I was selling American Eagles, Canadian Maples, okay, et cetera. And I quickly learned that the margins are so small that if you're not moving tens of millions a year, you're not going to make anything. So in my research, I found that hand-poured silver carries a premium. It carries a collectible premium to where, you know, people want something different, but they also want that purity, the 0.999 plus. So really, that's what drove me towards hand pouring. The process of learning about hand pouring was a lot of trial and error and a lot of questions to people that know what they're doing. And I want to go ahead and plug another company because the gentleman was, he's very well respected and he answered so many questions of mine. His name is David Yeager. Company Yeager's Poured Silver. If you've been around silver, hand-poured silver, you already know who he is. But basically, he answered a lot of questions. When it comes to equipment, it doesn't take much. All you need is a map torch that you can buy at Lowe's, a ceramic dish, and a mold, and flux. That's about it at a basic level. You can pour silver into graphite molds, wood molds, Delft clay molds, or iron molds. It's really not a difficult process unless you're trying to create a consistent product.
So when you say consistent, Josh, help me out there. What to make it more consistent? You mean having a larger run of nearly identical objects?
Yeah, so for consistency, like on the scale of shiny bars, we actually use electric furnaces. They're much higher entry cost, but we can bring silver up to the exact temperature every time. Okay. And we pour it into graphite molds.
What temperature is that?
Silver melts at 1,763 degrees Fahrenheit.
1763. How's that compared to like gold or other metals, iron?
Gold has a quite a bit higher melting point. I believe it's closer to 2,000 degrees. Iron, I can't answer that, but I know it's less than silver, being as you can pour into an iron mold. But with that said, silver is one of the most heat conductive metals on the planet or elements on the planet. So if you heat only to 1763 and pour into a mold, it won't settle into the shape of the mold. So we actually heat it to 2050 degrees Fahrenheit for pouring.
Okay. Want to ask you about recycling silver. Let's say from sterling silver, you know, 0.925. jewelry grade silver. Is that something that you're able to do, or if it's not, maybe not what you typically do, what kind of variants on the equipment that you just mentioned would you need?
Yeah, so it is possible to refine silver, but on a small scale, it's going to cost more in equipment and hazardous chemicals than it's worth. And just an example, junk silver, you know, typically, you know, 64 and earlier quarters, dimes, et cetera, you know, they run 90% silver, but they carry a premium that's in excess of if it was pure silver. So if you were to try to procure the equipment and chemicals to refine that to 3 or 4 nines, you're going to spend more on equipment and chemicals than the item worth.
What are the chemical inputs?
Typically for silver, I believe it's a acid-based. It has to be dissolved into... I'm trying to think of the term. I don't want to...
That's all right. You can break it down for
a moment. But yeah, so it's basically dissolved into where it's absorbed by liquid, and then you have to regenerate it into a solid. For example, gold, there's an aqua regia process, or cyanide is the most common way to absorb gold into a liquid. It's just chemicals that the average person can't get a hold of. If you can, it's very expensive.
So reclaiming silver from silverware, jewelry, I don't know if collectible coins are on the table, but in some kind of grid down without rule of law, without, you know, scenario where the financial system is non-existent where you live and silver becomes a currency. Let's just say, Josh, if the impetus was strong enough to reclaim silver, it is not an easy, inexpensive, or necessarily safe process. Is that fair to say?
That's fair to say. And one way to look at junk silver and to define that is, say, a 1964 quarter. It's 90% silver. The true benefit of holding junk silver is that if the United States dollar is fine and silver's not doing well, you still have a quarter. If the United States dollar collapses, you still have 90% of that quarter's weight in silver.
That's a great way to look at it.
The premium typically carries on. It's truly, in my opinion, not worth taking junk silver or even sterling and trying to refine it.
Right, right. Now let me challenge you on that a little bit. What if the price per ounce was $1,000?
So you still have.
Go ahead. Sorry, I interrupted. Sorry.
No, that's okay. You still have 90% of your weight of the junk silver at $1,000 an ounce. You know, it's.
Well, I'm trying to get at.
Perhaps it could be valuable to try and refine it, but in my opinion, the time and effort would negate that value.
In current contemporary situation, but in, you know, as members of the Prepper Broadcasting Network and our new show does focus on, you know, leading indicators of what if things are about to not become normal, and we all have seen the historic price of all kinds of metals, to include gold, have a certain, you know, measurably consistent rate of inflation over the decades, whereas silver's price at, what is it tonight, Ben, $26 an ounce, pretty close, has not matched that. That the physical price of silver today is considered by those who are aware as deeply suppressed. Were the same economic calamity that was about a month ahead of the shortage you mentioned to us earlier about to take place, some adjustment in the price of silver could send it to levels where perhaps it would begin to cause people to consider recycling silver. But the ventilation of those chemicals that you've named has to be, you know, a tough thing to manage, not for the unskilled, right?
Yeah, exactly. It takes someone who really knows what they're doing to refine it, especially silver. I think gold is probably easier than silver. Okay. You can separate gold from silver, lead, and whatever other minerals are there. But I agree. And when it comes to pricing, we certainly do not see physical price at this point truly following the impacts of crisis such as COVID. And my opinion is it's completely driven by the paper market.
Yeah.
That disconnect will happen at some point, and when it does, silver will rebalance.
So we delved into the macroeconomic aspects of this, which it always attracts an extra question or two from Ben. I got some more how do you physically do the hand pouring of silver questions coming up, but my colleague, I know he's chomping at the bit. He wants to follow up on a few of these things you've mentioned.
Yeah. We've done radio quite a while. He knows me well. Kind of what I'm taking from this is if and when there's a major war or another COVID or something equivalent or worse or economic collapse, there's not going to be a new supply of silver. There's not going to be recycling. There's not going to be people. There's not going to be any new form. An economist might say the supply of silver is very inelastic and is very capital intensive and costly. So that kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier. You know, get your silver now. It might be, you know, it might still be many years off till this happens. You never know. It could be tomorrow. But if you don't get it now, it's going to be way too late. Do you do much studying, or you have to follow it pretty deeply, I would think, just kind of like the global supply chain and all the different difficulties that the miners are facing. And also maybe you can talk a little bit about how silver, my understanding at least, silver is not found by itself in nature. It's always kind of, you know, with other ores, right? So how does that affect the supply of silver? And do you see a supply constraint going forward, even if there isn't a World War III or next COVID? I mean, everything I've seen at least seems like the silver supply is getting restricted. What do you think about all that?
That was a great thing you pointed out regarding silver when it comes to mining. I don't know of a single silver mine. It is purely a byproduct of mining gold, lead, and other items. In the example of COVID, supply chains were cut off from Mexico to the United States. Mexico is the number one producer of silver.
Yeah.
So any supply chain cutoff has a massive effect on the actual physical supply within the United States. But again, I don't want to keep beating back to it, but, you know, with COVID, there was an absolute inability to supply the market, but prices did not respond accordingly. You know, I would expect if I or the largest dealers on the planet, such as Apmex, cannot buy silver, cannot sell silver, you would think silver would be 50, 100, 150, 200 bucks an ounce. That didn't happen. I truly believe it's driven by the paper markets. So leading indicator, as you guys mentioned earlier, I think is always going to be the physical market. But unless there's a true breakdown in the paper market, the banks and whoever's driving the paper side of things, they're going to control the market.
Yeah, absolutely. The precious metal markets, whether they're rigged or not, we got indicators like that on future danger. And we report them when we see them, but it's pretty rare news to see an article where the rigging of the paper market, the reality of the scarcity of supply and precious metals rears its head. But you could be assured the next crisis that might happen. And on that note, Josh, Ben, we're going to put a shout out to a Prepper Broadcasting Network sponsor tonight. Tell us about them, Ben.
Greenovative. Greenovative.com. You guys might have heard Dave Jones or some of the other hosts talk about Greenovative. May not produce enough power to melt silver and, you know, have an electric furnace at 2,000 degrees. However, these power cells are really cool. They can filter water. They can recharge batteries. And think of it as like a solid-state battery that is able to just sit on your shelf for years and years. Doesn't expire. All you have to do is add salt water. And you don't need tons of salt water. You don't need to live next to the ocean. You need, I believe it was 2 teaspoons of salt for kind of like as a serving size, you know, to charge for an hour or something similar. I don't have the exact numbers. But if you had just a small jar of Morton's table salt, you would be able to generate tons and tons of electricity. So anyway, greenovative.com. You don't need solar power. You don't need very expensive battery systems, which I actually have purchased. I kind of wish I got one of these earlier, one of these Greenovatives. But remember, we have a promo code, PPH, for Patriot Power Hour. PPH20, PPH20, you'll get 20% off. We'll get a little bit of a cut that we'll put right back into the show and right back into the network. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about what they got over there.
Yeah,
man.
They got custom fuel cells up to 600 volts, custom made. And I'd like to ask the question of the equipment that Josh was mentioning. Could a battery like that even get any kind of smelted silver and pouring? Maybe, maybe not. Let's ask. Coming back to him in a minute. GMAG brand saltwater generated emergency power kits. Cold Fusion brand 12-volt power cells. Purinade brand 12-volt water purifier systems with the filters. And nickel metal hybrid AA and AAA batteries. Ben, capable of taking 800 lifetime charges. All available at
greenovative.com. Greenovative, just like innovative, except greenovative.com. Actually, it's not spelled the same way, so don't listen to that. Do it how it sounds. Greenivative. And of course, PPH20 is the code.
Yeah, back to you, Josh. That the furnace that you were speaking of before, what kind of power supply could that work off? Could any of these Greenovative custom fuel cells actually power the furnaces that would be required to get the job done?
So the power specs of the furnaces we use, they'll run off of a 15 amp circuit. So they're fairly low power ratings. I'm not sure of the full power specs of the cells you're talking about, but if you can plug into a 15 amp circuit, you can run a furnace that'll melt silver.
Yeah, it's going to take an electrical engineer that's not on this show to do the math. But where I'm driving with all of this, Josh, some more of these questions coming up is towards in a grid down scenario, what would it take? We've already had the conversation that reclaiming silver would be expensive. It would require chemicals that would be, you know, in short supply themselves. It's hard to do. But just if you're sitting at your own private mint, you're able to do this and you have 10 ounce or larger bars around, and the price of silver skyrocketed, and in the economy that in which you are existing, silver was transacted, a barter economy, an underground economy that wants to, for example, escape the surveillance that comes with fiat digital currency, right? What what would be the smallest, thinnest round coin that you could pour that wouldn't start to risk bending or breaking, you know, just in your hands because, you know, silver soft, right? How small can you go before you and still keep 0.999 pure silver intact?
Sure. So the smallest product we've made in the past, and we haven't made them in a while, we want to get back to them, are 5 gram 4 9s, 0.9999 silver bars. The issue as a consumer you run into is the smaller the weight, the more premium you're going to pay, but typically that premium carries forward if you were to sell it.
So what's the dimensions on that? How, like how thin or how small?
Actually thick than you would think. But they come in probably about half an inch, slightly under half an inch by about a quarter of an inch.
So nearly the size of a nickel?
In lengthwise, slightly smaller than nickel. Width is probably half the width of a nickel.
So between a dime and a nickel, you could pour silver rounds, and they'd be functional.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
And we don't typically pour them as rounds. They'd be more like a bar.
Okay. Okay. And you said about a quarter inch thick, or you can't get much thinner than that, huh?
Correct, because the surface tension of molten silver is a little difficult.
Gotcha. Gonna endure the background noises of pure amateur radio, folks. Got another question for you, Josh. The equipment you mentioned, how long does that last for, you know, casting, hand pouring, you know, the furnace and the other tools? What's the capital that you have to keep handy to keep an operation going? Does it have a life cycle of years, or some of these inputs used up at a pretty strong rate? Can they be repaired? How feasible, at the end of the day, what I'm asking is how feasible it is to run your own silversmithing operation, you know, off grid?
It's feasible. The furnaces, they're going to run in about $500. They last many years. I have furnaces.
Okay.
They've been running since about, probably 2014. They have maintenance costs. They have to replace coals. But the biggest cost is the graphite crucibles. We might get 400 or 500 ounces out of one crucible. They run about $20 to $90 a piece. So there's definitely a cost. It's purely a volume based thing. So if you're going to melt your own bars, you need to think about melting a lot of ounces if you want it to be cost effective.
Got to really make it an industrial level, or, you know, if silver, like Future Dan was saying earlier, we have economic collapse and silver goes up by a factor of 10 or more, then maybe it would make sense to break your 10-ounce bars into 1-ounce bars, right? Or something like that. Actually, real quick, we talked about turning maybe junk silver, 90% silver, into pure silver. That's not super feasible, it sounds like. Have you, or would you ever foresee doing the opposite? Maybe taking 9999 silver and
debase it,
debasing it. So you say, hey guys, this is actually 50% or 70% silver. Again, kind of, if silver goes to a very high level, maybe you want to kind of debase it a little bit. Have you ever thought about that, or do you think that's feasible?
That's a good point. It is absolutely feasible. You can cut silver with copper to come in at a sterling, you know, 92.5 or lower, you know, whatever you come up with. That's certainly, it's really a good point. But as long as I can pour pure silver down to 5 grams, I can probably pour it lower than 5 grams. You know, as long as the price of silver isn't $500 or $1,000 an ounce, then the need's not really there for me. But it is a great point, because, you know, with gold, it's hard to have a small amount of gold for premium that's useful for bartering or exchange.
Now I got a few more questions about alternatives if the price of silver went exceedingly high. You do have a limit on how small you can make a transactable object, a round or a bar. But I want to get, I want to kind of get to those in a moment. I just want to follow up on the equipment, though. The graphite crucibles, those are components that would be impossible to manufacture. Is there a way to substitute if you couldn't get graphite? Could iron working get you there, or is that a type of thing that if you had in mind being a prepper silversmith in a grid down scenario, you'd have to stockpile graphite equipment and perhaps other components that you were talking about earlier?
Yeah, and that's a good thing to bring up. You can pour silver in a lot of things. You can actually take a hardwood and cut a shape into a hardwood, torch it with a torch so it's good and burnt and blackened, and you can actually pour a silver bar in wood. The other thing is it's called Delft clay, which is basically sand mixed with oil. You can make very detailed molds or just basic molds in that and pour into it. Cast iron is a great option, but it has to be oiled and preheated well, else it'll just crack or break when you pour silver into it.
All right. So as we move into the more of the tactics of how you might operate with silver that you're producing yourself under this scenario, can you just recap for our audience the equipment you would need minimum and the kind of the form factor, like how large is this oven? How large are these tools? The whole kit, to pour bars for some amount of time before you needed, like you said before, replacement coils for the furnace, that whole kit, how much does it weigh? How much space does it take? And what would it cost to procure in today's environment?
Sure. I'll go back to the bare minimums. It's a ceramic melting dish you can buy for about $15 with a holder. I've been using the same ceramic dish for probably 9 years now. Flux, which is pure borax, you can buy it at Walmart. It's the wagon wheel type with no fragrance in it. You basically season a melting disc with the flux. You can throw some silver in and you can pour it into any of the previously mentioned mold items that I was talking about. And for melting, as I mentioned, is a map torch. You can buy it at Lowe's and it'll get the job done. You can melt an ounce in about 2 to 5 minutes with a map torch. But I want to add to safety, we try to operate safely. We want to use little safety glasses. We use welding gloves. And the number one thing is if you're using a graphite crucible, preheat it. If you don't, you will have a silver volcano when you pour silver into it.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, safely. What about storage? How would you? Is there any chemicals involved in just the pouring aspect? Or any ventilation concerns?
We run ventilation. Borax, it's not really a really hazardous material, but once you heat it up, it does put off vapors that you probably don't want to breathe. You don't necessarily need a vent hood as long as you just have proper ventilation in your garage or do it outside or whatever. You'll be just fine.
Okay, great. Now, I'm going to kind of focus a little bit more, not on the silversmith operation, which is super intriguing and cool, but just simply, how would an individual who wants to take control of their financial future, how do they use precious metals? But really, that all boils down to how can you tell if the precious metals you're receiving or purchasing are legit? How can you tell the purity? I don't think that there's that many small silver rounds out there that are fraudulent, but I've heard a lot of the 10 10-ounce and larger silver bars and gold, but I mean, that's so expensive. Can be fake. They can have kind of a silver on the outside, but the core is some other metal. So do you, I know that there's, you know, electronic scanners that you can scan your bullion. You can tell if it's 100% pure or not. That's the most expensive, and that's awesome if people can afford that or want to do that. But what are other options? I know there's a few ways to test for purity. I guess weight is one way. You know, you can displace water, all that type of stuff. But what are some best practices or some ways to make sure you're not getting ripped off if you're buying silver, and to convince somebody else that you have pure silver and they should, you know, treat it as such in the transaction?
Sure, yeah. Number one, and I echo this always, is first and foremost, if you're buying silver, gold, or any other precious metal, buy it from a reputable, respectable dealer. There is very low likelihood that you're going to get a fake product, because us as dealers, we fall under FinCEN government regulations. If we sell fake stuff, we're going to get in trouble. Beyond that, you mentioned on a basic level, specific gravity. That is truly the most accurate way to measure the purity of a metal in the cheapest manner.
Okay.
You need nothing more than a scale that measures down to 3 to 4 decimal places on a gram, which is pretty detailed measurement. So you need a decent scale. You need distilled water, a string, and a calculator. That's all you need.
How do you use the string and the distilled water? I've never seen this.
Yeah, so basically you would measure the weight of the item on the scale, write it down. You would put a cup on the scale, fill it with water, tear the scale so it goes down to zero. You would tie the precious metals to a piece of thread. You would set it in the water, not to the bottom of the cup, but just hanging in the water. And you would write down the weight that shows on the scale. And you divide the item, the weight of the item when submerged in the water, by its dry weight. And that will give you the specific gravity. It's a fairly easy thing to do. Silver will come in at a specific gravity of 10.5 if it's pure silver.
Unless if it's debased?
Exactly. If it's not pure silver, you will get something way off from 10.5. Even 92.5 sterling silver, it won't fall in anywhere close to 10.5.
Fascinating. And that requires almost nothing but, like you said, a very an accurate, probably electronic scale. So shove that in your EMP-proof Faraday cage as designed by Mr. Jones. Stick it in the garbage can that you set up with your other electronics if you want to actually know if you're getting silver. After the apocalypse, Ben, you got more questions along that line? Because I got a few more.
To be honest, I'm going to try that. I'm going to go grab an ounce of silver this weekend and do that exact thing and practice and just test it out. Because that is one of the coolest things I've ever heard. I understand the kind of I guess it's physics, but I understand the science behind it. But I've never done that. And that's super, super straightforward. So that's the type of stuff. Yeah. I'm really glad that we were able to get you on the show for Josh to share that with myself, but our audience too.
Yeah, that's the simplest way, the cheapest way. You mentioned earlier the electronic items. There is a device called a precious metals verifier. I think that probably the first to market is called Sigma Metalytics. They're not overly expensive. You're talking a few $100. They use electromagnetic waves to measure below the surface of the item, and they can tell whether it's pure or if it's sterling or whatever. They're a great option as well. But if you're talking prepping specific gravity, anybody can do it. It's just one simple division via calculator. done.
So this sort of dovetails with the next question I had, which is, how can we expect a black market in bullion to operate if gold or silver were banned, right? Because that happened before. You know, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, you know, put out word that all the gold goes back to the government now. And it took decades before it was actually legit to own and transact precious metals again. If the financial system were to have a calamity, as Ben and I watch for week after week, and we witnessed a president in the Congress saying silver is contraband, that's certainly not going to stop it from being transacted and held privately. But what could you see, Josh, as how that market might form?
That is absolutely a risk. And there's, to me, a simple fix to it as a owner of precious metals, or to anybody that consumes precious metals, is don't tell people you have precious metals. You know, there's, you see so often on social media, especially Reddit, the Silver Bugs community, or the Facebook Silver Bugs, where people are bragging about all the silver they have. And it's, to me, pure stupidity. Yeah. You know, if you buy silver from a reputable dealer and you buy it in a way that you're not using a cash payment method, then there's nothing more than the record at the retailer. So your only risk is if the government gets a hold of those records.
So if I, in this type of environment, I've kept it to myself. Ben's kept his ownership of bullion to himself, and except for on this podcast repeatedly. And I, you and I have an appointment to transact some business. I'm coming to you, Josh, to turn certain larger bars I got into smaller objects that I'm going to be using to transact despite the prohibitions. The equipment that you might have, I mean, I know you're set up in a workshop now. You got a plant, you got a factory, but if you were pressed to bring a service that included the skills that you, sir, possess, how small could that set of equipment be? Could you make it mobile? Is that the type of thing that you could put in a trailer or back of a pickup truck?
Yes, absolutely. I mentioned the map torches, but you can just buy at Lowe's. I also have a 100-gallon map tank.
Okay.
And I've been running off that same tank for years. It's something you could do in a trailer, and you can melt thousands of ounces of silver if you wanted to.
All right.
Basically, I say map. Propane is burns dirty. If you try to melt silver with propane, you probably will be able to, but you'll get a lot of impurities into the silver or on the silver. If you use MAP, it's very clean burning. It's cheap, and you know, you can really get a lot done with it. Much hotter fire as well.
So to do it right and not have that risk, I'm coming to you with large bars, and what I'm interested in is for you to turn them into smaller transactable objects, but I want them pure. I want them, you know, I kind of want them like that guitar pick you got on your website, because that's a neat shape. I like that. But anyways, bringing it down, you could pack it up and be in a trailer. You could be mobile in a truck. That's certainly possible. The reason I, you know, as a tangent here, Ben, you know, when I was a kid, I grew up on a farm, and the blacksmith came to the farm to shoe the horses. And I would go to the barn and watch him do it. And he had everything he needed, right, in the back of a pickup truck with a bed canopy. And he'd just come on in there and drop the tailgate, launch the furnace, and get to work. I was thinking that the outfit that Josh was going to describe was – had the same form factor. It wasn't larger or more complicated than that. And Josh, you know, after I described what my blacksmith did when I was a kid, it's about the same operation, just you're working with a different metal and you got a few more specialized pieces of equipment, right?
Exactly. Yep. It wouldn't take much at all. You could certainly pile it into a trailer as long as you had the had a decent size gas tank. You'd be good to go. And when it comes down to it, if you needed to, you can melt it with propane too.
Yep. Yep. So that'd be a cover that could be used. I'm a blacksmith. I got a blacksmith set up. If this were to become contraband, we know certainly about the heat. You discussed the heat and you discussed, you know, obviously there's light. I'm thinking tactical now. You mentioned you were in the Army. So was I. I'm thinking, you know, noise, light, discipline, but you know, this is the 21st century. So there's other, you know, measures of signals, right? So if this type of operation were known to be in existence and the full force of modern authority were brought to search for it, what other signatures are coming off of an operation that would be melting down silver? There's gas emissions, right? Others?
I'm like, you're using electric furnaces. You're obviously going to be burning a lot of electricity. Gas signature, I think, would be minimum, especially if you're using map torches because they burn very clean. I don't foresee it being a problem in the scenario you mentioned.
Now, if you introduce them.
Unless you're running, if you were to be running 10 or 15 furnaces at a time, which at our scale with shiny bars, we typically run a max of about 2 furnaces at a time on a 15 amp breaker. So they're really not using much electricity.
Okay. Now, if you brought in the whole equation of trying to reclaim, recycle, you know, 0.925 sterling, which we previously discussed, involves extra chemicals, it involves extra dangers. You're probably in a hazmat suit to even do it. If you just, you got pure silver and you want to change its shape, then you're pretty much same signature as anybody else working with metal in the countryside, right?
Yes, sir. Exactly.
How much time before a skilled smith could take receipt of, let's just say, you know, 10 ounce bars and turn them back to someone in, well, you mentioned it, that whatever that minimum amount of grams, you said it was like about 4 grams, the smallest size?
Five is the smallest we've done at Shiny Bars.
Yeah, so bringing it from 500 ounces down to 500, five, you know, 5 gram pieces or whatever the output would be. Is that a time expensive operation?
That is quite time expensive. If you research the market, you'll see that smaller weights, 1 gram, 5 gram, whatever, they carry a much, much steeper premium than buying a 10-ounce bar or 100-ounce. The reason for that is because it takes nearly as much time and effort to make a 1-ounce bar as it does to make a 10-ounce bar.
And then to get down to a 5-gram bar, What kind of multiple do we have there? Like if it took, well, how long does these things take? Let's just from 10 to 1 and then down to a 5-gram from a 1-ounce. Breaking a 1 ounce down into 5 gram pieces. We talk in an hour, 12 hours, 6 hours?
Yeah. So if we're cranking out, say, 10 ounce bars, shiny bars could probably put out about 2,500 ounces in one day. That's including poured, stamped, and polished.
Okay.
If you, 5 grams, you would probably be around about half that, at 1,000 to 1,400 ounces.
What about the fatigue factor? How, like one smith doing his best, but not, you know, you're not, it's not an emergency, right? But let's just say, because this activity would not be wholly welcomed by the owners of the fiat dollars in that system, they may be looking to prevent this activity. and you had to stop in a location and get it done and leave, you know, in that time frame, does Smith have to rest, or would he work straight through it?
It's not overly labor intensive. I think the most labor intensive part is actually stamping, specifically for Sandy Bars. A big chunk of the stamping is done by a 3-pound hammer and a handheld stamp.
Cool.
Other, like our logo stamp, is done by a 40-ton press. But aside from that, the most time-consuming part, if you're trying to create a marketable product that's branded with weight, purity, and a logo, stamping is by far the most time-consuming and labor-intensive part.
Gotcha. And on a related note, coming back to a topic we touched before, if the price of silver went truly high enough, where to even come down to what $25 U.S. currency will buy today, that much worth of goods or services, if the price of silver went to over $1,000 an ounce, you'd start to be talking about having a quite small piece of silver if you wanted to transact at the $25, $50, $75
level. Assuming, you know, a loaf of bread isn't $15 at that point, but I get your point. It doesn't make sense.
Right. If you needed
to... Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. Inflation aspect is great. I want to go ahead and elaborate on that, because when I often get the question of what should I buy if I'm trying to prep or invest, etc., I always recommend buying 1-ounce products. If you can buy the fractionals and you're okay with the premiums, buy them, because if you get to the point where silver's $1,000 an ounce and you got a 10-ounce bar, what are you going to do with it other than if you can melt it down and turn it into smaller denominations? To me, the time and effort of melting it down isn't really economical if you could have just bought the 1 ounce in the first place.
Yeah,
exactly. Well, sometimes we take things to the extreme on Patriot Power. We look at where the end of these scenarios could be, and if a 1 ounce for whatever the outcome was, a 1 ounce unit was still carried too much purchasing power to safely carry around, and would leave you in situations where you had to barter in addition to the, you know, because you couldn't break change, right? That's one of the problems. You can't break it down enough. Can pieces of silver, little slugs, be inlaid into what would resemble a metal coin? You'd use, you know, other metals, non-precious metal, like a carrier or a disc. And I know these things have terms. I'm unfortunately ignorant of them. I'm hoping you can help me out, but could you build an object that was a quarter size, but it was inlaid with a gram of silver?
Yeah, and that's good to bring up. I personally have not tried inlaying silver onto another metal. Just this past week, I had somebody reach out for a 50th anniversary bar for their parents, and they wanted silver, and I reminded them that 50th anniversary is supposed to be gold. And I just inlaid a 1 gram gold bar onto their custom silver bar to remedy the situation.
That's awesome.
But, yeah. Nice.
But the fact that 1 gram gold bars are available, you can get silver down to the gram. It's very expensive, but to me, it is worth it to have fractionals for exactly the reason you mentioned.
Fractionals. You know, how do you define a fractional? Anything less than an ounce?
Exactly.
So you've done the inlaying of what I'm talking about. If you had a copper round, you could throw a tiny portion of silver into it. That all the equipment, all the capability of a clandestine smithing operations, if you will, If that were in effect, would you need any additional skills or equipment to perform that, or is it pretty much comes with the package?
I think it comes with the package. And again, I want to echo, I have not personally tried to inlay silver, but I do know that silver and copper physically mixed together well. So you could bring the purity down to include whatever 1 gram of silver within a copper melt.
And then you'd have to figure out how the specific gravity of copper times a certain weight and silver. I guess your specific gravity measurement could be used as long as both of them were pure metals and you knew the specific gravity of both, right, Josh?
Right. Yeah, you should be able to. It probably wouldn't be that complicated. I personally haven't tried it, but I'm sure if you dove into the numbers, it wouldn't be that difficult.
All possible. Well, those are my questions. And Josh, I just want to thank you for, you know, working the way through it. I am so much better educated. Been waiting a long time to talk to you. Thank you for making time for us. And with that, Ben, any other questions for our guest, Josh from shinybars.com?
Yeah, I'm sure you, especially since you're, you know, regulated or overseen by government agencies, financial, all that stuff. You may not be able to answer this. You might have to say, I'm not a financial advisor, but I do this with my own money, but I can't tell you guys what to do with your money. But let's say you had $10,000, you know, 10,000 US dollars right now, and to put into precious metals. What percent or what amount would you put in gold and what amount into silver and what denominations? You know, would you do half gold, half silver, 90% silver, 10% gold, or, you know.
And how you, fractional? You, like what in what
yeah,
units?
Would you only get 1/10 ounce of gold and 1 ounce of silver, or would you get 1 ounce of gold as well? Just if you had 10 grand and you could get silver and gold at these prices right now, what would you get? Is gold overvalued compared to silver, vice versa? Just some thoughts on that.
Sure. I'll proceed with, I am not a financial advisor, but so I'm really partial towards silver. And I'll explain that in a moment. But again, I really always recommend a significant portion. I would say 50% in 1 ounce or less, and for pure investment type purposes, 5 and 10 ounce bars. I wouldn't give anything over that.
Okay.
The reason I'm partial to silver is because silver has a very large industrial demand versus gold. Gold is purely intrinsic value. It's just the lure of gold. There is some amount of industrial demand for gold, but when it's compared to silver, it's negligible. And the fact that silver is a byproduct of gold mining, typically, or mining of other minerals, it's a byproduct. At some point, if gold mining production comes to an end or really goes into a flat mode, people aren't going to mine for silver unless the price of silver significantly rises. And in my opinion, silver at some point will rise purely based on the industrial and investment demand versus gold, which is purely investment demand.
I wholeheartedly agree. I have a little bit of gold for sure, but more of it in silver, mainly for the same reason that you just mentioned. And I think it's been in the last year. I did a full analysis of the silver supply, world supply, and I forgot the amount. But more than 10% of all the silver that's mined is destroyed, meaning it goes to very small amounts in electronics or waste, et cetera, that cannot be recycled. So a lot of the silver they're mining is already being put into industrial demand. A lot of that is never recoverable. We just went through how difficult it is to recover silver from, you know, even junk silver, let alone cell phones or something. So that stuff's gone.
He said cyanide.
Forever.
Once I heard cyanide, I thought, well, that's not even worthy of talking
yeah,
about
right?
in a covert prepping scenario.
So
I don't think cyanide.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't think cyanide even recovers silver. I think it's purely gold. okay. Don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure it's purely a gold process.
Right. And solar panels are out. Yep, solar panels are big, you know, on silver. So long story short, a great amount of supply of silver is going directly into industry. There is a lot that is recycled, to be honest, based on the stats I saw at an industrial level.
Huge factories
But if we have an economic collapse, that the capacity and infrastructure and industrial, you know, look what happened with COVID. They weren't, you know, recycling silver and starting new forges and stuff at that point.
No.
So if we get an order of magnitude worse than that, there's not going to be any new supply.
It's out of reach.
So
yeah.
Constrained.
It's not an option. Yeah. Hey, Josh, can you tell us about your logo? At shinybars.com. You got fascinating. You talked about hammering it into some of these rounds. Lots of, very artistic pieces that we're looking at here. But tell us a little bit about the Shiny Bars logo.
Sure. I actually get a lot of questions about that logo. It's a design I personally worked hard to come up with some designers. It's often referred to as an alien logo. Some people see an alien. I personally don't see it. But if you look at it closely, it's a basically a crucible pouring silver bars.
Okay.
Nice.
You'll see a Latin phrase, fortunam suam quisque parat. That basically translates to every man is responsible for his own future. Or it could be translated as every man is responsible for his own wealth.
Nice.
I could see the pouring crucible now. I guess before you could kind of see the Roswell alien kind of character's eyes. But now that you've explained that, that's not what I see at all. I see the molds and the little miniature pouring crucible. Excellent, excellent.
Yeah, and that phrase is awesome, too. That's what we're all about here, Prepper Broadcasting Network and Patriot Power Hour.
Yes, sir.
All right, Josh, anything else you'd like to tell us about your website, your operation, how people can reach you, kind of sales that might be had on shinybars.com here and there?
One thing I want to bring up is one of the most common positive comments we get for Shiny Bars products is the consistency in our products. And I want to put it out there that my lovely wife and her smooth hands pours 99% of the silver bars you see on Shiny Bars. So the consistency is truly a testament to her efforts in pouring.
It's a team of Smiths in holy matrimony. Excellent. I love it.
Yes, sir. Yep. And if anybody wants to reach us, it's sales@shinybars.com. And, of course, shinybars.com is our website. We have done over 1.3 million in sales since 2012. So we're quite reputable. I don't think you'll find a negative review about Shiny Bars. We source all of our metals from top refiners and retailers on the planet, including Priomet, who is a refiner in the United States, and Apmex is one of our wholesale suppliers as well, and they're one of the top retailers on the planet.
So great. Josh, we're going to get out of here. I really, really appreciate it. We learned so much. I think our audience did too. Hey, guess what? In my opinion, when things really hit the fan financially and silver blows up, we're going to have you back on. How about it?
Anytime, sir. And feel free, if you have any questions about precious metals, shoot me an email. Give me a call.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Josh.
Thanks a lot, Josh. Great topic. True expertise. Putting our mark down in the prepping community, bringing up a new topic and peeling it back. But you're the guy with the knowledge and the expert and skills. We didn't know enough about it. You helped us get there tonight. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. You guys have a great night, and I hope your audience enjoys it.
Thank you so much, guys and gals. We will be back live next Tuesday, July 13th, normal Patriot Power Hour news blitz and full analysis and trends and whatnot. But this is an awesome interview. So glad we were able to get it in. Everybody, we'll see you next week.